our audience. It shouldn't be so strange to a number of them. I have read the results of a survey today that says that between 7 and 14% of the population actually indulge in a subset of this. So keep your mind open, realize that many of your neighbors are doing this kind of stuff. It's not really strange. We're going to hear more about it now. Please, Corey.
Well, Jody, I guess the first question I'd like to ask you is, when's the first time that you realized that you were interested in this kind of thing? And if you can be more specific about what kinds of things you're interested in.
I think I've been interested in this kind of thing for pretty much as long as I can remember having any kind of sexual or sensual thoughts at all, since I was about 5 years old, I'd say. I'm into a lot of different things. I like dominance and submission. I like a power exchange during sex. I like different kinds of impact play, like spanking, flogging.
So when would you, although you said you were thinking about it at age five, when would you say was your first sort of bona fide sexual I won't say sexual experience, but an experience of this kind?
I'd say when I was 14 years old.
And how did that opportunity come about?
I asked my boyfriend at the time. I had been thinking about that sort of thing, and I asked him if he'd be willing to tie me up. And he said, I thought you'd never ask.
Oh, so he'd been thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fabulous.
So proceeded from there.
And how did that go? Was that first experience, I know sometimes first more vanilla sexual experiences can be uncomfortable. Was that satisfying for you, or was it?
Yeah, it was very satisfying at the time.
And did you go on to, I assume that you and your boyfriend at that time went on to months and years of?
Yeah, I mean, we proceeded from there. We had, you know, read a couple of the infamous gore novels by John Norman, which are kind of this fantasy series that has a lot of that kind of stuff in it, and we sort of drew ideas from that at the time.
So at that time during your adolescence, was that mostly various kinds of bondage and
Actually, it was more like dominance and submission at the time, and also a little bit of bondage. But more kind of mental games where he would, you know, tell me what to do and I would do it, and just to do stuff like that.
Now, was there also kind of a more traditional sexual relationship at the same time? I mean, were you having, you know, genital sex?
Yes.
At the same time? I see. And moving on to your next relationship, did this continue throughout your later life, through college and and your career and so on?
My career.
And can you sort of describe the spectrum of things you're interested in beyond, for example, we talked about sadism, we talked about dominance and submission and so on. Are there particular things that you find especially interesting? Or in particular, which side do you prefer to be, the top or the bottom?
Well, I'm a switch, which is someone who enjoys both sides of the fence. But of the two, I tend to prefer being on the bottom.
Why is that?
Okay, go ahead.
Well, partly it's sort of my natural inclination. It's just the way I am. That's what I find really fulfilling and really exciting. To me, the experience I get as a bottom is very different than the experience I get as a top.
So you mentioned that you can switch from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine how to do that myself. If I imagine myself in those situations, can everybody switch? Can Carl switch, for example?
I think you should ask Carl that.
I'm trying. Carl,
I would guess
there?
That not everyone can.
So we're having a technical problem here because we can barely hear you, but so you're saying that you're purely dominant.
Yes.
Now, I understand that you have what might be considered an unusual relationship with a woman. Can you describe that? your slave.
So this woman has freely entered into this relationship of or this role of being a slave.
Yes.
And she's not on the phone, of course, but can you describe how she feels about that, or how she I guess the words I'm looking for is how she becomes comfortable making herself totally submissive to someone else? I mean, this is sort of contrary to what people usually think about when they think about, feminism or empowering.
I can't very well speak for her directly as far as her attitude on things. However, I can tell you that she frequently makes observations that what she wants from me is my control over her, that she wants not to have to make decisions. She has some, let's say, unkind words for certain aspects of the feminist movement.
Uh-huh.
It is entirely voluntary on her part to get here. Having gotten here, she doesn't want to have the option to get out. And so that is why we consider it appropriate that she identified as a slave.
So I believe I saw on a previous discussion we had that you said part of being truly free is the freedom to give up your freedoms. Ironically, would you agree with that?
She certainly would.
Uh-huh.
And I understand why she says it. For me, on the other side of the street, of course, that is how I look at the world. I take my freedom in what I can choose. She regards the expression of her freedom to be what she has given up. But she no longer is obligated to keep track of.
So do you keep track and control every single action in her life, or is it only in certain spheres that you control her?
There is certainly the practical problem of how would you do that to someone every single minute of their life. And
seems impossible.
You can take micromanagement so far. Certainly at the macro level, I am in control of just about everything that goes on in her life. As to whether she's going to have a burger or a hot dog for lunch, I neither care, and it just doesn't matter, so she does what she wants. It's an issue of where there is an issue that I have an opinion, I'm in a position where I can enforce that opinion on.
Can you give us an example for our listeners of sort of the kind of scenario where you would be in control, or you would make her do something that she either doesn't, not that she doesn't want to do, but a decision that she doesn't want to make? Or just an example of how you control her in general, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
All right. We have this idea of what we informally call the house rules. And one of the house rules here is that, in general, she's not allowed to be dressed at home.
At all?
At all. Just my personal preference, because I like female scenery, and so there. Now, unfortunately, this isn't something that she struggles against very much. She's quite comfortable without clothes. But
if she was uncomfortable, would that make a difference to you? I mean,
the likelihood that I would have been interested in claiming her would have been a lot lower, because that would have been an area of conflict between us. And I'm not looking for conflict. I'm looking for control.
I see.
Even so, if I had found the same person who had only one different, if this one aspect of her had been different, and nonetheless we had agreed that I would claim her in this way, at that point, no, it wouldn't matter, because she has a position, she has a place that she wants to be in, and if I give her such an order, she'll do it.
When you voice your opinion or your desires, do you take her desires into account?
Oh, certainly. She's still human. She's not an object. She's not an inanimate object, I should say. She's human, and she has an emotional makeup, and she has a history of any number of normal human experiences, and one has to be wary of the potential for abuse. One of the bad things that goes on in the BDSM community is that the things that what we'll call vanilla people hear about it are the spectacular failures. And those spectacular failures are the bad things where something got out of hand. The dominant lost control, he abused other people. And, you know, this is where you hear about a guy in New York who was having kinky sex with his girlfriend and he accidentally killed her because they were playing with breath play and he cut off her oxygen supply for a minute too long and she's brain dead and then she's dead. You know, that's the sort of crap that you have to avoid. The bottom line is that she's still human. And more importantly, I am utterly responsible for her. She's very, very valuable to me. So I have to take care of her. Yes, I take into consideration her needs and her wants and her desires.
I was thinking about this earlier, about sort of the distinction between objectifying someone. Now, is it fair to say that in some sense she's an object that you respect and take very good care of?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Boy, she knows it. Of course, you know, here I am, a man in the 1990s saying that I have a woman who likes being considered a boy. People tell me that I'm full of crap. I'll stand by the statement.
So, well, let me ask you about that. How has that impacted, say, your employers or your friends or people you know? How accepted are you among this group of people? Or have there been any problems because of this kind of unusual relationship?
We're going to have to solve this technical problem at some point.
Well, so for example, do your employers, do your coworkers know? Does it upset them, or have you had any kinds of specific problems?
In general, people don't seem much of an awareness. They don't go out of my way to say, by the way, I'm a man in place. Or along the way, have this outlook. I'm a forgetting to block everyone. Look at me.
Do you have an exclusive relationship with this woman?
Yes. They're what we call closed.
Now, when you and I were talking about earlier, you actually did mention that there might be a possibility of a third party in this relationship. Did I misunderstand that?
Yeah.
Guess I misunderstood, or guess I might
no,
be...
No, you understand correctly. It was our intention, when we first got together, that it would be a household of three. Sort of put that on the back burner because my particular thing all of it. But we found an appropriate surgery. I don't want to go into that if you're crazy.
Can I ask what the role of the third person was going to be?
A second place.
Were you imagining sort of children and some kind of family-style scenario? Well, obviously it's already a family, but were there going to be children involved? And
she has a daughter. She's divorced and has a daughter. She lives with us.
I see.
The daughter tends to be pretty much unaware of things herself.
How old is she?
We don't go out of our way to make her aware of things.
So Jody, this doesn't sound at all like what you were talking about. This is a very different sort of experience. You're not enslaved when you're at the bottom, and you're not such a master when you're at the top.
I'm not right now in that type of relationship. I'm not involved in a 24/7 relationship. Right now what I do is more...
24/7, like a Unimart? Is that what it's called?
24/7 is an expression that people into S&M used to refer to a relationship that is ongoing all the time. It's you are in your role with one another throughout your entire day, month, and year. You're always like that with each other.
Is this a role you're playing, Carl?
Excuse me, I'm really...
Yeah, we are actually getting you very, very dimly as well.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Is this a role you're playing? You spoke like it was more than a role.
I don't regard it as a role. I regard it as my nature. I don't feel like I'm playing a part when I do.
And in these relationships, I was given to understand, you have to have some trust, right, to be able to submit, particularly in the bottom side, to submit yourself to it. How can your partner trust that you will never go beyond limits. I mean, you the way you're speaking, since you're not playing a role, you do as you please. You might end up killing her one day, for example. How can she be sure that that's not going to happen? And that is.
On the other hand, what we have is, at this point, experience in which I managed not to kill her. But I managed never to kill her.
Well, of course, that was an exaggeration. It wasn't an attack. It was just, yeah.
I understand. Nonetheless, I am aware of the things that she likes. I'm sure the things that she considers reprehensible. So what to avoid. Now and then,
so you trust on the generalities of your loving relationship, but you don't necessarily have to pay attention to the role you're playing, I guess.
So Jody, how would you differentiate your relationship from Carl? It sounds like Carl's, like you said, in a 24/7 relationship, and for you, it's more that the two parts of your life are more separate. Am I understanding that right?
Well, I'm not saying that I would never want to be involved in that type of relationship. That's just not the situation I'm in right now. I think they're similar in some ways and they're different in some ways. They both involve sort of the same subset of activities and I think perhaps the same underlying feeling. I've heard it compared to like people who play golf as a hobby and people who play golf as a profession.
Excellent.
I mean, both people play golf, but just one person plays golf a lot more seriously and a lot more often. I like being, for example, in the submissive role, and I might one day find myself in a situation where I could be in a 24/7 relationship with someone, but I'm not in that situation right now.
So would it be fair to say that this is, for you, just a very interesting way to have sex, or your preferred way to relate to people, or how would you categorize it?
I believe that it's a very basic part of my psychological makeup and a very fundamental part of who I am. And it does obviously affect how I have sex and just happen to be tied up with that part of my life. But it's more than that.
So for you, sex and this kind of activity are separate, or?
No, they're often interrelated because thinking about that sort of thing and doing S&M activities is a sexual experience for me. But I can also get enjoyment from something like polishing my Topps boots. That's not really a sexual activity per se, but it becomes sexualized in a certain manner. And even I'm not having an orgasm while I'm polishing someone's boots, it just gives me a good feeling and a feeling of, everything's right with me when I'm doing that. I feel good and happy.
So, in line with that, can you describe for us maybe a couple of scenarios? I mean, I hate to be so personal, but what you or what a hypothetical person in the BDSM scene might do as a scene, I believe you used that word before.
Right. People use scene to refer to, kind of the evening's activities, although it could be an hour, it could be, a week. A hypothetical thing usually starts assuming that you're not in some kind of long-term arrangement, such as Carl and Francine are in. It would start usually with some kind of negotiation where both parties would agree on what the limits were, things that people did not want to do, things that people wanted to do, and so on.
Sorry about that. We're having some technical difficulties here, but please go on.
Okay.
I think we're still on the air.
So, for example, let's say that one party always had a fantasy of being kidnapped, and that excites them and turns them on. So they tell the person that they're interested in bottoming to, you know, I'd really like to do a kidnapping scene. Would you be interested in role-playing kidnapping me one evening? And they would discuss, you know, what would generally take place and what, you know, wouldn't take place, and they'd agree on safe words and stuff like that. And then maybe, you know, somehow the bottom would walk in the door and the top might come up and grab them by surprise.
I see. Did we talk about safe words? Did you...
I don't think we explicitly explained what they are. Okay. A safe word is a word that both parties agree on ahead of time, that when it's uttered, it means stop everything that's happening right away. And it's kind of a way that you can be assured of your safety in the scene.
It's kind of an escape hatch from the scene in some sense.
Right, and I think it allows both parties to feel safe in a certain way, because the bottom can feel like they can have that experience of being taken away in the scene, and the top can feel secure that they're not accidentally violating the bottom's consent.
But at the same time, you have to forget about that safe word and those bounds in order to enjoy it.
Well, I don't think you have to forget about it. It's more kind of a, you know, certainly I don't think that most people, while they're involved in an SM scene, are thinking constantly, okay, my safe word's red, I can use it at any moment, you know. Although maybe some novices would be thinking that, because that would make them feel safe and comfortable in giving themselves up to someone like that. But some people like to take themselves to a space in their mind where they sort of know they have the safe word in the back of their mind, but in the forefront of their mind, they're not really thinking that way.
The thing that strikes me about what you're saying, and I find sort of very unusual, is that it seems like you have to do a little bit of, I don't know, training or thinking about this or something before you can engage in these kinds of activities. I mean, can rank amateurs do this without understanding, without getting kind of safe word training, or it seems like there's a fair amount of understanding about trusting people's limits and understanding what the role of the top and bottom are that don't necessarily come totally automatically. Is that
I think a lot of people practice SM or DNS without really categorizing it as such. You know, people who just spank each other during sex, or people who kind of have little role plays like, you know, I'm the TV repairman and you're the housewife at home. You know?
There's one thing that I see constantly in movies, even on television, which is people having sex with their hands over their heads.
Right, and even that is sort of a little bit of a form of S&M that, I mean, some people go for 20 years in a relationship doing things that people in the S&M community would consider S&M, and they don't use safe words. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's acceptable and viable. I guess what I'm just saying is that if you know about these safe words, you know, hey, they're a good idea, think about it. If that fits into what you're doing, I think they're a good idea in a lot of situations. Not in every situation, maybe, but...
So we have two different views of this world. There's Carl, which is all holes barred, no holes barred, and then there's the very responsible picture you're painting.
No, I think that Carl and Francine are very responsible in what they're doing, and this is just my view, that Francine did consent to what she's doing. She consented in the beginning, and... You know, that was very responsible, because I'm sure that they had a very complicated discussion about that, and...
You're back. Great.
Yes, I'm back. Phone dropped out.
So just to clarify, Carl, I mean, I guess we've mentioned her name. Francine still has the choice now. If she wanted to leave, for example, you would allow her to, I assume, or is that wrong?
I would say that that's wrong.
Oh. So...
Again, this is going to sound funny, because people will say, oh, it's just a man doing some macho shit. But, for example, for Valentine's Day, she gave me a very had a tattoo put on her mon that says property of Carl. She has explicitly given up the right to leave.
We're
sorry, thought I had to drop out again.
No, not at all. Actually, you sound a lot better now. We finally routed you through a different thing. But I was speechless. I was trying to imagine the state of mind of Francine. That's, can anybody enlighten it? Maybe you, Carl, or somebody in the audience here?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
What's the state of mind of Francine that would cause her to want to go into such a agreement?
And so even more so, it's a little bit different from the safe word aspect we've been talking about. There apparently is no escape hatch for Francine. I mean, she's committed to this until
when? What's the end of this thing?
It's my hope that she'll die in my arms about 50 years from now.
Is that her hope?
Well, it must be if she's willing to do everything she's doing now.
It might sound a little bit scary, maybe because it's connected to sex and relationships, but I mean, people make decisions of irrevocable consent in other situations, like when they join the U.S. military, for example. You can't just leave the U.S. military. They'll come back and get you, you know?
Yeah, that is true.
I think it's a decision that people have the right to make, and
yeah, I think I was overly prude in my reaction, actually. I just was never confronted with something like what Carl was describing.
Well, I think we're all just a little bit surprised. I mean, in a more traditional relationship, I guess, you know, you can always imagine that someone could get a divorce or, well, let's say, Carl, if Francine met someone she liked better. I mean, am I just not even thinking in the right terms anymore? Is it?
She's removed that option from herself by getting herself. I mean, it's a deliberate choice on her part to have taken possibility and removed it from her life. It's just gone. It's not there anymore.
But I think that's fascinating. So, do you have a kind of a sort of the dual commitment? I mean, have you in some sense promised to her, or is there some expectation that you will not grow tired of her? If you don't mind that kind of.
That's fine. No. In fact, that is exactly what the promise is. One thing that you will find is that in right up what they call a contract, now in a legal sense, but it is nonetheless a firm statement of intention, outline of what is desired. And we wrote a contract about a year after we got together. We didn't start with one, documented it, but we thought it would be a good thing. Having been together for a year, to now say, okay, let's write down our however many decades. And part of our contract that we wrote that we both signed is that perpetuity.
For any of you, either of you.
For either of us. I am stuck with her as much as she is stuck with me. And that is because I have wanted responsibility of caring for her.
But that's interesting, and that's a little bit different from what I would expect. If you're, you know, the master and she's the object, you know, if I get tired of one of my objects, I might discard it and move on to something more interesting. So, but this is a little bit different because it sounds like you're implying there's some kind of, or you're saying that there's a responsibility on your side as well.
Yes, I'm saying that she is not merely an inanimate object that I might get tired of. She's a human being, and I have taken on what I think is the strongest demand on my own self in terms of responsibility for her possible. And I didn't do this lightly. I did it because it is I think I need to. And I walk into that responsibility fine.
That was very lucid. I think I finally understand. Thank you.
I think, like, in some ways the responsibility of a top of that type towards, or a master of that type toward their slave is, I mean, the way you're speaking about something and an object that they would own, it's not like the way they'd have a TV set. It's more comparable to the way you'd have a pet. I mean, you can't just, or you could, but it would be highly unethical to just own a dog and then just kind of abandon the dog. You know,
That was still more than that, but it's more that kind of feeling.
Yeah, it's more than that. But, I'm not, mm-hmm, you know, but yeah. It's...
Well, yeah, I'm fascinated by Carl's story, actually. I'd like to get to something that might be of a little more interest to, I mean, this is total interesting, but personal interest to somebody who might be listening. I think some of the feelings that you have described are not uncommon. I certainly have imagined getting kidnapped and kidnapping other people, and I've talked to some of my partners about it. But of course, you know, I'm a normal person. I would never indulge as an animal or whatever. So somebody who was thinking along these lines and wanted to maybe try something in a safe environment, what could they do to see if they like it and go more into it like you and Carl have done?
Well, they could, one way to start would be to suggest kind of simpler and more innocuous activities to your existing partner if you had one, you know, start with, oh, would you like to hold my hands above my head while we make love? Would you mind tying me up? Or could I put your hands above your head? Could I tie you up? Maybe some people, like, they give the person a book to read that might have that kind of as a theme. Maybe watch a movie, like, I mean, even Exit to Eden, as strangely as most S&M people view that as not being the best movie about that sort of thing.
Which movie is this? I'm sorry?
Exit to Eden.
Sort of a bad adaptation of a good book, from what I understand.
I see, okay.
But even that might be something to spark a discussion with a partner who you weren't sure how they might feel about your suggesting that sort of thing to them.
But from a different point of view, in the absence of a partner, is there a culture in Pittsburgh or a group of people to get involved with around here? Or
I think there's starting to be one. There's an all-women's organization called Pittsburgh Leather Girls, and that's open to all women of all sexual orientation who like to do SM or play with women.
So SM is linked to leather? Is there the fetish and the SM side of it, or...?
Well, I think often people will refer to people who are interested in this sort of thing as the leather community.
Okay.
I
didn't mean to interrupt. Go on with that. Pittsburgh Leather Girls, is that the name?
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
So
how would I look them up in the Yellow Pages? Or?
Well, you can contact them through the GLCC, the Gay and Lesbian Community Center, on Forward Avenue, or... send mail to me, jodi@magenta.com.
That's magenta, M-A...
J-O-D-I at magenta, M-A-G-E-N-T-A.com. So that's an all-women's organization. There's also a pansexual organization. That's for people of all sexual orientations. And I could also
and
give
genders.
People information about that and genders, okay, if they're interested in that. And then there's also two gay male leather clubs, Pittsburgh Motorcycle Club and Three Rivers Leather Club. And I don't have the contact information in my head for that, but again, I could get it for people if they're interested.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
Sure. And that would be a place where you could, I guess, meet some other people. And there's no...
If you contact one of these places or one of these organizations, there is no commitment, right? You can go and just inspect and see the goods before you...
Yeah, I can only speak personally for the women's organization and the pansexual organization. Obviously, I'm not a gay man, so...
but they're low-key, and you can go and just see what's going on.
Confidential,
with...
yeah.
So these are more social and kind of informative groups rather than a big group... parties, for example. Like, there isn't a Pittsburgh leather dungeon you can go to, for example. Or is there?
Not that I know of. If there is, I'd like to know about it. But
I heard rumors 2 years ago that there was one in Squirrel Hill, but I never confirmed either way. Yeah.
I don't want to control the agenda here, but I'd like to go back to...
I think you do.
Well, perhaps I discovered that I am a top after all.
I would only like to follow your desires.
I'd like to know go back to, I don't know if you fully described sort of sample scenarios for people into this lifestyle and what you do and what it feels like. What does it feel like to be, I don't know, spanked or to lick your master's
And Carl, feel free to interrupt any time.
What does it feel like?
From the point of view of someone who's had perhaps more sort of standard sexual experiences, they might not know, they might not see the point in something that doesn't culminate in orgasm. You know, they might not see the point in licking your master's shoe for
okay.
half an hour.
Well, it wouldn't not necessarily culminate in orgasm. It could. That would be something you would negotiate that you wanted. It can be a sexually exciting experience that makes you aroused and really, you know, in the mood for sex. It can be a feeling of kind of peace and tranquility, kind of a almost a, like meditation at times. Things that involve any type of receiving of pain can often produce endorphins, just like a runner's high or something like that. That's just a very easy, I think, to understand natural sensation-based feeling that's produced.
How do you go from that to feeling sexual? Forgive me, for me those two are different, but for you they're very related. Maybe you can try to express that relation.
Well, for me, I think it's like wiring. I mean, for me, those experiences do produce a sexual response. Thought of them produces a sexual response, and the actual. So maybe some people are not wired that way, and some people are. But I think that almost everyone might be aroused by some form of what's considered S&M.
We have time to get one caller about somebody who might be curious either how to start on down this path or who might be curious to understand it further. The phone numbers are 621-9728 and 268-9728. Forgive me.
Well, I would like to ask Carl the same question. I think we focused primarily on kind of the politics or the power structure of his relationship and less on the sexual side of it, or the sort of more intimate side. So if you don't mind, is there anything you could enlighten us about the kinds of the intimate side of your life with your slave?
But this is not a manifestation of anger or latent
Never.
Violence in any sense, right?
Never. If I'm ever angry, I would...
What was that word? A bad what? Dumb?
A bad dumb. A dominant.
A dominant. Okay. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I can certainly understand that feeling. I wouldn't trust myself not to let it spill into the times when I was angry and when I had latent violence, and that's the thing that I...
Where he can hit, what he can hit, how hard he can hit, in order to get the right. You hit someone across the middle of the back, you'll do kidney damage.
I was wondering, my guess would be that you and Francine don't employ stop words then, given your relationship. Is that true?
In this regard, it's...
done.
That's right. That's very interesting. We're having some terrible noises. There's another caller in the line who has dropped the phone. Is the other caller there?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Taiwan.
Hello. Hi.
I had a suggestion of a book that people should read if they're interested, that's sort of more abstract and doesn't really deal with the specifics. It's called Meeting the Master by Alyssa Wald, W-A-L-D, and it's a book of short stories about the sort of more psychological aspects of BDSM and not about the equipment and leather necessarily and things like that.
Yeah, that's actually the part that I'm more interested in. That's very interesting. Thank you. So, do you have any comments? That's a very prized comment. Thank you. Do you have any comments or questions for some of the people involved here?
No, I guess I just wanted to suggest that book that people should look into.
What is the author again? What Wald?
Alyssa Wald, E-L-I-S-S-A, W-A-L-D.
Okay.
And the book is called Meeting the Master.
Meeting the Master. Sounds very interesting. I'll be sure to pick it up. Do you know if it's available around here, maybe in the city? Not City Life, but...
Yeah, it's actually a Pittsburgh author. She was on the cover of In Pittsburgh a few weeks back. And Carnegie Mellon's even mentioned in the book.
Oh, that's great. So we should be able to find it in the South Side somewhere, perhaps?
Yeah, Barnes & Noble even. It's a big seller.
That's very nice. Well, thank you. Feel free to stay in the line, or if you want to make a comment or whatever, or hang up. It's up to you.
Okay.
Okay. So, boy, that's kind of okay. we're shuffling papers. Hold on for a second.
I would like to say something more about what it's like to. I think it's a feeling of great freedom. A lot of times they talk about people want to know why you'd want to give up so much of your freedom to someone by submitting to them. And I believe that there's the concept of you have the freedom to do things, and you have the freedom from, which is sort of what I get sometimes when I submit. The freedom from sort of the overriding responsibility for yourself during that period of time. A sensation of incredible freedom just to give yourself.
When Carl was describing his relationship before, what I was feeling was an overwhelming sense of responsibility. I was feeling like Atlas in his shoes. I couldn't bear that, and I certainly can understand the other side of that, where you don't have to make any decisions, or at least you fool yourself into that frame of mind. Sort of along
get off on exactly that responsibility.
Say that again.
I control when I take responsibility.
You
that's
get off.
I like it.
You said that you get off on that responsibility.
Yes, because the responsibility that I've taken represents.
And so you like, in a sense, that burden or that that. All the responsibilities that you have for her. I mean, in a sense, you have a responsibility for two people.
Yes. I've doubled my responsibility, but I put myself in complete.
I've got sort of a general question for both of you, which we can maybe use to finish off the hour. What would you consider the top 10 or top 3 myths about this kind of lifestyle, the kinds of misconceptions that you'd like to clear up for the benefit of our listeners? In any order, you know, just the things that your biggest pet peeves.
I think one of them for me is the concept that all S&M is abuse of some kind. If people who felt that way could ever witness an S&M scene and how beautiful it can be and how it can represent love and caring between people, they would never feel that way again. By and large, the people who do consensual S&M are really careful about making sure that everyone is agreeing to what's happening, and it's the furthest thing from abuse that could happen.
Carl, do you have any pet peeves about how society views this kind of lifestyle?
I would say that we're trying to some sense bizarre because people are
Can either of you comment on the sort of legal standing of this lifestyle? Has anybody gotten in trouble, or are there, are how permissive are our laws and so on toward this kind of thing? Any horror stories that you can relate?
What were they accused of?
Endangering minors.
She finally pled guilty.
As I understand, the husband is now still charged for, what do you call when you basically insult the court? What is that word?
Contempt?
For contempt of court, yes. I
had not heard that.
I don't know exactly why or how, but I guess they are trying to get at them in any way they can.
That's very interesting, because part of the... got the Houghtons out of the immediate trouble, that he demanded to be able to read paragraphs into the record of the court. On a certain amount of what it was supposed to do, that he had made a mistake, in fact, by having trusted this supposed family friend.
So the conclusion is, I suppose, that while this kind of activity among consensual, and I want to emphasize consensual adults, is completely legal, it's not to the better taste of the captains of society, and there might be some risks. Is that accurate? No. Okay. Whatever. So some people have had trouble, but a lot of people practice this kind of lifestyle without any problems, and it's totally legal. So we need to close down. Some closing comments from anybody here.
Well, I don't have any closing comments. I have about 1,000 more questions, but I want to thank you all for coming, and it was a fascinating show. Please come back whenever you can.
Next time I'll do it in the studio.
Yeah, and perhaps we should have some kind of live on-air training session. That might benefit our readers.
Whack! Oh, that's instructive. Yeah, all right.
But I, for one, there's numerous things that we just barely touched on in tonight's show that I would like to go into much more detail. So if either of you is interested in coming back, and if any of our listeners are inspired to call in or come to a future show, I'd be very interested in having you again.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you for listening. This is WRCT Pittsburgh. It's a little after 12, and there is some music coming up. This has been Sex Talk Love Line, whatever it's called this week. Thank you. Bye-bye.